let's begin with the following introduction. Here, in this part of the world, it's Erev Tisha B'Av, after Chatzos, and some poskim, the Rama amongst them, are not excited at all about learning Torah at this time. However, there are kulas, there are those who are mekil, and even amongst the machmirim, if we're learning about Tisha B'Av itself, then everybody seems to agree that that's mutter. For those who are on a different clock, and it's the morning of Erev Tisha B'Av, then no doubt that this is perfectly okay. What we have for the laws of Tisha B'Av is the following introductory question, which hopefully will move us throughout the shir, and that is Manish Tana. How is this Tisha B'Av different than any other Tisha B'Av? And one of the focal points of our discussion will be someone who tested positive for corona and yet is not suffering any symptoms. We're going to have two polar extremes, which are simple. We're going to have a case of someone who is in quarantine, but he feels absolutely no symptoms. He's feeling great, or as Simon and Garfunkel would say, feeling groovy. And for such a person, he will fast on Tisha B'Av. On the other extreme, we'll have people who haven't been tested, but have symptoms. And it seems that the scientists have determined that in more cases than none, there will be symptoms that clearly indicate the virus even without a test. And in case such a person does not have Tisha B'Av, forget about Tisha B'Av as far as eating and drinking is concerned. But in between the two polar extremes, we have to really analyze Tisha B'Av for cases of either A, someone who tested positive. He's not just in quarantine because he had some connection with someone who tested positive. He himself did not test positive. That's a whole different story. But somebody who tested positive and has symptoms, someone who did not test at all and has symptoms, what are those symptoms? And will such a person fast on Tisha B'Av? Now, by way of introduction, we have to assume a tripod. There are three levels of fast days. On top of the pole is Yom Kippur. Yom Kippur is a doraisa, it's a biblical requirement of fasting. And the Torah goes as far as to say that if someone doesn't fast on Yom Kippur, he incurs a chiv kares. For Yom Kippur, the only leniency that we'll have for eating and drinking is going to be what we call a chole sheyesh bo sakana, someone who has been determined after asking a baki. Again, some posts can require asking three bakiim, but la mola halacha, let's get it from one baki. One expert physician tells him if he fasts, then he might endanger his life. In such a case, even on the great fast of Yom Kippur, he will not fast. And just to tell you a little story, you know, I like to tell stories. My wife was pregnant, and I was a Talmud in Rav Salvechik's class, and I asked him if she would fast on Yom Kippur. Immediately, he tells me, yes, she will fast on Yom Kippur, but, he adds, if she sees the following symptoms, and he starts describing them, then no Yom Kippur. So I was a smart aleck, and maybe to this day I regret it, but I said to him, Rebbe, you mean we should feed her pachos pachos mikashir, you know, every 9 minutes give her half a kosevis. So he starts raising his voice. He says, I told you there's no Yom Kippur for her. She should eat kisudas Shlomo HaMelech b'shaito. Now, we don't know exactly what the sud of Shlomo HaMelech was like, but it was a very lavish banquet, and it probably exceeded even that of Henry VIII. Anyway, Baruch Hashem, my wife did not have symptoms, and she was able to fast on Yom Kippur. So that's Yom Kippur. Yom Kippur requires, for any leniency, a chole sheyesh bo sakana. How do we determine a chole sheyesh bo sakana? Is it on the basis of the physicians? How many physicians? Could it be on the basis of a person's own assumption that I need to eat or I'll die? Would it be a case, for example, of a woman who's just given birth? And for those who are learning Daf Yomi, you remember that a woman after birth is called a Chaya, a Yoledes, and there are very, very great leniencies as far as eating and drinking on Yom Kippur for a Chaya, for a Yoledes. Whether it's the first 3 days, even if she doesn't ask to eat, whether it's the next 4 days up to day seven where she asks to eat. There are even cases of a pregnant woman where they allow her to eat on Yom Kippur because of the Pikuach Nefesh to the fetus. That's called in the language of the Gemara, Yuma Achazaso Bolmus. That means she smelled something and there's a fear because she was overwhelmed by that wonderful smell. She might abort the baby, and in such case, that becomes a Chol HaSheyesh Bo Sakana. Now let's drop two levels down to the bottom level, and then we'll get back to Tisha B'Av. And this is called Shaar Tzomos. Other fast days. Included in that is Shavuos B'Tammuz, Tzom Gedalia, Tainis Esther. These are the fast days which are most lenient. And in regard to these fast days, we don't need a Chol HaSheyesh Bo Sakana. All we need is a chole she'ein bo sakana. Anyone who's categorized as a chole she'ein bo sakana, which may mean that fasting for them is difficult, is challenging, very uncomfortable, but there's no chashash, there's no medical basis for assuming that by fasting they will endanger their lives. So just X out the whole issue and possibility of sakana. However, because these are the lenient fasts, even though we're talking about a chole she'ein bo sakana, there's no life-threatening situation, and it won't lead to any life-threatening situation, nevertheless, there's no obligation to fast. Would there be a possibility of fasting? Well, we're going to see soon the chayodam, that if the person is suffering a very great weakness, then we're not even going to allow you to fast. We're going to force you to eat. And here we have another kula. In addition to the fact that a chol she'ein bo sakana, if that person is suffering as a result of the fast, either from hunger or from dehydration, the desire for drinking, such a person will eat. That's kula number one. Kula number two is that with regard to these other fast days, an uberes umenika does not fast. A woman after childbirth, or a woman who is pregnant. So we have pregnant women, we have women after childbirth, especially in case of a nursing woman, they do not fast on those fast days. But now we get to the middle category, which is the category that we're about to enter. And if Phil joins us, he's already in that situation. He's already in Tisha B'Av. In such a case, ubros menikos misanos. Pregnant women and women after birth will fast. In contrast to the other tzomos, like Shavuos B'Tammuz, etc., and that places Tisha B'Av on a status that's very similar to Yom HaKippurim. Just like in Yom HaKippurim, barring exceptional cases, a pregnant woman will fast. Even a woman after birth, in certain cases, will fast. And that chumrah, that stringency, was superimposed on Tisha B'Av as well. So that Tisha B'Av has striking similarities to Yom HaKippurim. For example, the Laila of Tisha B'Av is included in the fast. No conditions will help you to alleviate the commencement of the fast with nighttime. In that sense, it's like a full Yom Tainis, similar to the paradigm of Yom Tainis, which is Yom HaKippurim. However, we must keep in mind that Yom HaKippurim is Derabbanan. And with all due respect to upgrading Tisha B'Av, I meant to say Tisha B'Av, I'm sorry if I said Yom HaKippurim, that Tisha B'Av is only Derabbanan, and with all due respect to our upgrading Tisha B'Av, as we saw in the case of Ubros Umenikos, that they will fast like Yom HaKippurim, it still remains a fast day that is Derabbanan. And although we mentioned the two kulos of Shivas Batamuz, one is Ubros Umenikos Eino Mesanos, and the second was Chol HaSheyesh She'ein Bo Sakana, the Chumrah of Tisha B'Av is explicit with regard to an Uberes and a Minika. We don't find, although that's going to be our research project for today, what about a Chol HaSheyesh Bo Sakana? A Chol HaSheyesh Bo Sakana, whose life is in no way threatened by fasting, but is suffering a Tzar Godol, is suffering what we call Chalishus HaGuf. The body itself is weak. The person should get into bed. In such a case, we have a Machlokes, two traditions, two Minhagim, codified by the Mechaber on the one side and the Rama on the other side. Should such a person be fasting, is he required to fast on Tisha B'Av? And I will quote to you the language of the Mechaber in Hilchas Tisha B'Av, Siman Tuf Kuf Nun Dalet. And if it helps anybody who might happen to Mishnah Berurah in front of them, this you'll see on pages 61 going on to 62, Chole Shu Tzorech Lechol, and the Mishnah Berurah qualifies this by saying, Hu Cholush Vechash Begufo. He is ill, and he feels it through his body. There's an overall weakness in his body. Afal Pisha Ein Bo Sakana, Machilin Oso. The language of the Mishnah Berurah, Machilin Oso, in my humble opinion, is indicative of a few words in the Mechaber. Maybe the Mishnah Berurah derived his conclusion from the Mechaber, because the Mechaber writes, quote, Machilin Oso Miyad, the person who's a Chol HaSheyesh Bo Sakana, but he feels Chalishus called Gufo, and he is in this state of weakness, says the Mechaber, listen carefully to the Mechaber's Lashon. He says, the B'makom Choli Lo Gazru Rabbana. Rabosai, I'm not sure if you're on the same page as me. The Mechaber is telling me a Gevaldig Chiddush here. When he says, B'makom Choli Lo Gazru Rabbana, he is telling me that for such a person whose life is not endangered by fasting, but he will suffer weakness throughout his body, his status is that lo gazru bei rabbanan. And you don't have to be a Briscoe Lamdin to understand what the Mechaber is trying to convey to us. This individual, and the Mechaber is codifying this in Hilchas Tisha B'Av. Had he said this in Hilchas Shaar Tainios, I would have nothing to add. But in Tisha B'Av, he's telling me that B'makom Choli Lo Gazru Bei Rabbanan, the Rabbanan never enacted the mitzvah of Tainis of Tisha B'Av in a Makom Choli. And what kind of Chol are we talking about? A Chol She'ein Bo Sakana. So on the one hand, We've upgraded the status of Tisha B'Av vis-a-vis the other Taniyos to the status equal to that of Yom HaKippurim vis-a-vis the halacha of Ubros and Menikos. But on the other hand, the Kula that we found in all Taniyos other than Tisha B'Av, other than Yom Kippur, namely that B'Mokom Choli, if he's a cholesh, ain bo sakana, and there's no chashash whatsoever of sakana, he's not going to fast. The machaber is applying that same yardstick to Tisha B'Av. Tisha B'Av, my friends, is caught in what I call a tug of war. And I use that term just for pedagogic purposes. One part of Tisha B'Av, one dimension, is pulled towards Yom Kippur, and that's the Ubros Umenikos. There's another part of Tisha B'Av that is pulled towards Shar Tainios, and that's a Chole Shenechlash Gufo. He's in a state of tsar. His body is weak as a result of the fact that he hasn't eaten, he hasn't drunk. And such a person, the Machaber says, is lo gazu beirabana. That's a very heavy statement. And here, I want to quote to you the Brisker Rav, my Rebbe's uncle, Rav Velvel. And the story goes that somebody was not feeling well. He was a chole, very, very weak. It was Yom Kippur. It was Tisha B'Av. And it was going into Tisha B'Av. The man came to the Brisker Rav and said, I'd like to fast. So the Brisker Rav said to him, and I have a feeling he meant it cynically, that if you want to fast on Tisha B'Av, then you better accept upon yourself a tainis yachid. And what the Brisker Rav was trying to convey was that he's not included in the mitzvah of fasting on Tisha B'Av. B'makom choli lo gazru be'rabbanan. He wants to accept upon himself a fast as a tainis yachid, that's called Kabbalah's tainis, mincha time before the day you have a kabbal on yourself a tainis. That's a fine mitzvah. I don't know if it should apply in the case of somebody who's so weak, but don't confuse it with Tisha B'Av. It is not Tisha B'Av. Tisha B'Av is a tainis tzibur par excellence, similar and molded after the prime example of Yom HaKippurim. And the Gemara says at the end of Tainis, Ein Bein Tisha B'Av L'Yom HaKippurim. There are very few differences between the two. You want to accept upon yourself a Tainis Yachid? Okay, a Tainis Yachid, but that's not Tisha B'Av. And I believe that the Brisker Rav took the Mechaber literally. That B'Makom Choli Lo Gazru Be'Rabbanan. In fact, we have a precedent for such halacha in Hilchas Shabbos. Amiro l'nachri shvus. We don't tell a nachri to do a malacha on our behalf on Shabbos, but b'makom choli, we can instruct a guy to do a malacha on our behalf, even though it's a chol shein bo sakana. And the Gaon, the Vilna Gaon, proves from this halacha that there is a precedent for being lenient with regard to a chole, not only with regard to the Iser Gzera of Amir Liakum Shvus on Shabbos, but also, says the Gaon, with regard to fasting on Tisha B'Av. And now we apply the principle of B'makom Choli Lo Gozer Be'Rabbanan. You want to fast? Then you have to go through the rules and regulations that govern a tainis yachid, accept upon yourself a tainis yachid, but that's not what it's all about. That's not Tisha B'Av. Call it another entity, a tainis yachid, but it's not a tainis tzibur. The problem that we have here is, before we get to Corona, is the Chassam Sofer. The Chassam Sofer, in the case of the Mechaber, right here, in Siman Tof Nun, Tof Kuf Nun Dalet, The Chasam Sofer claims in a Tshuva in Aruch Chaim Siman Kuf Nun Zayin, and you have this all on the pages of the Omer Kapshat, that the Geder of a Cholish Ein Bo Sakana in Tisha B'Av is what's called Dechuya. It's not Hutra. And therefore, he says, based on this concept called Dechuya, that he should be very careful about how much he eats, and he shouldn't be eating too much. Perhaps he should be eating on a slower basis and wait intervals between one achila and the other. The Brisker Rav, on the other hand, understood that a cholish ein bo sakana with regard to Tisha B'Av doesn't have Tisha B'Av. That's called the hutra. It's completely hutra. It's mutter for him. And what I'd like to study with you is the Ramah, because we began with the Mechaber. Let me read the Mechaber once more. Tavkuf Nun Dalet Sif Vav. The Mechaber writes, Chole Shehu Tzorech Lechol Ein Tzrichin Omei, which means we don't have to rush him to a physician and determine whether he must eat. The man is a chole, he's very weak, he's bitzar, he's claiming he has to eat. We don't have to worry about omen. And then the Mechaber says, "B'makom choli lo gozru abonah." Comes along the Ramah and codifies a minhag. Umiu noagim lis'anos kol zman she'ein lem tzar gadol. Sheyesh lachush lesakona. The Ramah writes that we're on the borderline here, in this case of Tzar Gadol, with a chole sheyesh bo sakona, and he's outspoken about it. He says, "We'll let him eat on Tisha B'Av." Why? Because yesh lachush lesakona. If he gets weaker and weaker, it might be a life-endangering situation. This, for sure, in my humble opinion, would reflect the approach of the Chasam Sofer. We're talking about Hutra. I'm sorry, we're talking about Dechuya. This is not Hutra. The Ramah, by codifying this minog, is indicating that not everybody agrees to the formulation of the Mechaber that B'makom choli lo gozu be'rabbanan. In this case, he's not yet a chole sheyesh bo sakona. Right now he's a chole sheyesh bo sakona. He's very weak, he's suffering, but there's no sakona. And therefore, b'makom choli gazru be'rabbanan, despite the fact that he's ill, he's weak, he's suffering from the tinnitus, says the Ramah, the minhag is he should still be fasting on Tisha B'Av. Only on Tisha B'Av. And obviously, the Chasam Sofer has shoulders upon whom he can stand upon. This is all before we get to Corona. Because we have to know the basic laws of Tisha B'Av. And according to the Ramah, a person who's not Bisakana, he's suffering tremendously from the fast, he is required to fast. However, the Ramah does give us one little admission, and that is that it's a minhag. Noagim lis'anos. This is not something that is ikar adin. And therefore, says the Ramah, ha'mekir lo hifsit. If he doesn't want to take advantage of this minhag, and say, well, he's got to force himself to fast, then you know what? Lo hifsit. We're not going to hold him in any way responsible if he decides that he's going to rely on the approach of the Mechaber. He's feeling awful. And b'makom choli lo gozru be'rabbanan. And he's allowed to eat. So if you ask the Ramah, what should I do, Rebbe, Rabosh Isserles? Should I fast or should I not fast? I'm suffering tremendously. He says, try to fast as best as you can. There's no life-endangering situation here. But if you can't take it, and if it's too much for you, go ahead and eat, and you'll be somech on the mechaber, and that's fine. I just want to make the following point. I don't know if this is relevant to anyone here in the shiur, but if you happen to work in a home or a hospital that has both Jewish and non-Jewish patients, and has both Jewish and non-Jewish physicians, and you will take advice from them, if you're one of the patients, as to whether or not you should fast, then unfortunately, and I say it with a krechts in my heart, it's the non-Jewish physicians that will tell you you're okay to fast. And the Jewish physicians, I'm not talking about Orthodox physicians, Yerei Shamayim, they will say, what? Fasting? What do you have to fast for? You're a chola. This is something that my father, Olav Shalom, had to face as the chaplain of the Coney Island Hospital in Brooklyn, New York, for 4 decades. Terrible thing. Okay, Rabosai. Now we talk about Corona. What is the status of Corona as a chole vis-a-vis the fasting on Yom HaKippurim? Should he fast? Should he eat? Should he eat a regular meal? Should he eat shiurim, just smaller amounts, spread out over longer time intervals? Well, maybe we should tell him that he shouldn't fast at all. And this question is analyzed by the contemporary poskim as we speak, and they divide into different categories. Category number one, a chole who has tested positive for corona. Issue number two, does he have symptoms? And we could talk about some of the symptoms. Issue number three, what happens if he tested for corona but he doesn't have any symptoms? Issue number four, what happens if he came in contact with someone who had the disease and he's required now to be in bidud? And number four, shall the halacha divide into two groups? There's what's called kvutzot sikun, those who have other issues in health, and are older people. If you have those two factors, number one, you're suffering from other diseases, blood diseases, pneumonia, or high blood pressure. You're suffering from asthma and other possible pulmonary diseases. And that combination of age and diseases, that could put your situation in great danger. And Rabosai, again, I don't know what you're watching and what you're seeing. Yesterday I saw a whole collection, a gathering of physicians. I think it was in the city of Washington. I don't know if you got to see it. If you did, you'll know what I'm talking about when I talk about that Nigerian a nurse who has already dealt with 350 COVID patients. And the basic theme and the agenda was that we're going crazy over something that is controllable. And there's a whole discussion about children and so forth and so on. If you get a chance, you'll take a look at it. The only reason I mention it is because some of these physicians have been taking care of corona patients who have tested positive and they have symptoms. And not only that, they even have other diseases and illnesses that endanger perhaps their immune system. And the physicians are telling us that we are treating these cases and they are surviving. And maybe our overriding fear is not justified, it's paralleling the society on levels like education, level like social intercourse, levels like finances, and so forth and so on. Now, since we've established that on Tisha B'Av there's a chumrah that upgrades the severity of Tisha B'Av way and beyond the bulk of other fasts, and that expressed itself in Me'ubros and Me'nikos, they fast. And the answer is that we're gonna require that they fast, because right now they are not considered a chola. And even if I'm going to go like that shita, that a person who cannot come to a chola bidei sakana is nevertheless considered a chola, nevertheless, fasting is not going to in any way endanger the life of a mu'uberes or a menikas, again, unless we have certain symptoms, but as a general rule. And the fact that they are weak, perhaps weaker, they need more energy than everyone else, that's not going to give them a status of a chola she'yesh bo sakana. And a chola she'ein bo sakana fasts on Tisha B'Av. Now, the Shulchan Aruch in Siman Tov Kuf Nun Dalid writes that Chaya, which is a Yoledes, a woman after birth, for 30 days, she does not fast. So again, we've been talking about pregnant women and about nursing women. Now let's talk about women after birth. And a woman after birth for 30 days does not have to fast. Not only that, a chole shetzorech lechol is he's allowed to eat. And b'makum choli lo gozru bei rabbanon, and this is what we saw codified in Shulchan Aruch and in the Rambam. Fine. Now, when the Mechaber says that a chole shetzorech lechol is allowed to eat, he adds the phrase that we mentioned before, b'makom choli lo gozru rabbanon. So who is this chole that has to eat? And he's a chole shein bo sakana. And again, just by way of introduction, the background is that fasting is not seen as necessarily unhealthy to the body. And the Mishnah Berurah here in Nabi Yud Aleph says, Ratzaloma shu cholush v'chash begufo. He's getting very, very weak. He's feeling the weakness. Is therefore afal pisha ein bo sakona machilin oso. We have no fear that he'll come to danger, but we will feed him. And this, my friends, is on Tisha B'Av. The Mishnah Berurah is telling us that if he's feeling weak and it's Tisha B'Av, then machilin oso. And I think machilin oso, as I said before, indicates that it's not even a choice of his decision. He has to eat. Now, in the Bir Halacha, he begins to open up a little bit of a window for exceptions to these rules, and that is that perhaps a chole she'ein bo sakana should be eating on Tisha B'Av, even if he's not chole and chalosh begufo. And this is the case of an epidemic disease. And back in the day of the Mishnah Berurah, this was common when there was cholera. Cholera is a very infectious disease. So the Bir Halacha writes, Ein b'sefer pischei olam. I'm not familiar with the sefer. The memakom she'ein ha'machla shel kalera chazaka chas v'shalom. To say that when there's a magefa of cholera, then there is no Tisha B'Av because of the Mechaber's language, b'makom choli lo gazru b'rabbanan. He says, you know what, you're going to close shop on fasting. And that's not something that we want to do. And therefore, says the Mishnah Berurah, chas v'shalom, that we should tell him he's going to eat. V'chein b'shtia, and also drinking. And Misha rotza lis'anos b'mokom she'ena machle b'zam is chas v'shalom. Yesh la'atzro ulazhiro shilo yelech mipesach beso kol hayom. He should lock himself up in his room. I would like you to join me in this very interesting journey of the Bir Halacha, in which he based himself on the Pischei Olam. He's telling you that if the machla of chalera is chazaka, which means that it's raving and it's going amok, it's infecting the millions out there, then chas v'shalom, to allow such a person to eat. But he says, what if the machla of cholera is eino chazaka? He says, in that case, we're not going to have him eat. We'll add a little bit to the staff, the nursing staff, and we're going to make sure and supervise him. How is he doing? And if we find that he's possibly spreading this disease, we have to immediately tell him to stop eating. Now, I mentioned this Bir Halacha to you because the Bir Halacha seems to indicate that on the one hand, if the machla of cholera is not strong, then we cannot say lo gazru rabbanon tainis. There is a possibility of fasting. And he says the following. If there's a possibility that he's spreading the disease, then chas v'shalom, we cannot perhaps even allow him to fast. And even though we recommend him to be very careful, we're not going to rely on that. So if there's a heter during a machla magefa, then we have to know that that magefa is tested positive for corona. It's in a state of bidud, at the end of which, Amir Tashem, they'll be able to return to the Jewish community.
Rav, can you ask cholera? Or he's...
No. No, he's a case of someone who is in an environment and found in a location where there is cholera, but the cholera is not in its pinnacle. It's not chazak. And here he says that since The language is Ein ha-machla shel cholera chazaka. And he writes that he has to fast.
You understand how it's different than our case, right? We're asking with our case, right?
Well, again, as I said at the outset, we're going to deal with many different scenarios, and I see that it's getting late. We better get into the many different scenarios. But I think you should keep in the background that the Mishneh Berurah, based on the Pischei Olam, in a case of Machla Shel Cholera, he differentiates between Chazaka and not Chazaka. And if it's not Chazaka, then he doesn't want a person like that fasting. Again, I'm going to read the... It's a very terse language in the Mishneh Berurah. He says, "V'makom she'ein ha'machla shel chaleria chazaka, chas v'sholom yochal pochos mikoseves b'chdei achilas pras v'chein b'shtia." And I think he's saying that mimonafshach, if the cholera is chazaka, we will not tolerate fasting. If, on the other hand, the cholera is weak at this point and it's not spreading, then I'm sorry, I got confused again. If the cholera is not spreading, then we're not going to allow him to eat. If the cholera is spreading, then we will require him to eat. That's what I think the Mishneh Berurah. I don't want to get too bogged down in the Bir Halacha, because I want to see if we can get the broader picture, and we're limited in time. Okay. So, Rabosai, just to summarize, we have this almost anomaly of Tisha B'Av, which is midway between Yom Kippur and Shaar Tainios. It shares some of the chumras of Yom Kippur and other kulas of Shaar Tainios. We have a major issue in Makom Tsar or Chalishas HaGuf on Tisha B'Av. The Mechaber says Lo Gazu Beirabonon, and he includes Tisha B'Av in Shaar Tainios, and if he's a Chole, then he never got the mitzvah and was never included in the mitzvah of Tainis. On the other hand, the Ramah seems to advocate, based on a minug, that unless he's Tsar Gadol, where he can't tolerate it, then we could be more makir. But as a general rule, if he's suffering, the Ramah advocates in favor of his fasting. However, we have to be very careful, because the Ramah stipulates that yesh lo tzar gadol v'haya lachush lisakana. The Ramah will only allow a Tsar Gadol to eat on Tisha B'Av if it might lead to a Sakana. Right now he doesn't have a Sakana. But if the continued fasting could bring him into a state of Sakana, then we'll allow it. V'amekilo hifsit. There is the sheet of the Mechaber. Cholesh Ein Bo Sakana doesn't fast on Yom Kippur. This person is suffering. He's considered a Cholesh Yesh Bo Sakana, despite the fact that he will not come to a life-endangering situation. Now, what I'd like you to do, again, if you have the Omakup shot, and again, I want to thank David for sending it. On page 2, he gets into the Corona issue. His introduction here, which you'll see at number 1, is that the Magen Avraham advocates in our time, if there's Shas HaDever, there's some sort of plague in the air, then if he's Menusa, She'eno Ochel V'Shoso Kolet Chas V'Sholom Shinui HaAvir, which sounds like the person has a very positive experience. He, I guess, hangs out, if you could use that phrase, in a place where the avir, the air is pure, it has not been contaminated by the dever. And even though it's a shas hadever, and you don't fast b'shas ha-dever, dever is a kind of a pestilence, a kind of a magefa, if he's experienced and he knows that he can eat and drink, then his status is different and he can fast. Says the Bir Halacha in Tav Kuf Nun Dalet that there's a difference between a place where the Magefa is in its full blast, with all its power, to a place where the Magefa is not in full bloom. It's kind of laid back. And once again, we've seen that already in the Pisrei Olam, where he differentiates between Machlas, Cholera, which is Chazaka, and a period of time in which the Machla is not so contagious. It's not so aggressive. And here, he quotes a tshuva from Rav Yosef Shalom Eliashev, who writes that the reason why we're going to make these distinctions is because he can fast. And if he can fast, even if we're going to tell him, well, he doesn't have to fast, there should be some amount of fasting that he should implement. If for no other reason, just to link up with the Avelus. So Rav Eliashev is saying that even in a situation where, because of the machla medabekes, we're not going to fast, but we should still have some minimum amount of fasting that'll give him a kium of the tainis tzibur. So that's something important. Okay, I'd like to now dedicate the time that we have to the final psak halacha of the contemporary poskim. We'll start with Rav Moshe Sternbach. And he comes to the conclusion that if he's a chola she'ein bo sakana, we have no reason to suspect that the fasting will bring him into a state of chola she'yesh bo sakana. Nevertheless, if the fasting will be machbid cholio, if it will make it more difficult and straining for him to fast, then even if there's no sakana at all, he's potter milusanos. Now, as far as cholera is concerned, is there an equation between corona and cholera? And the poskim, quoting the Divrei HaMagen Avraham, come to the conclusion that corona although it's something that could spread throughout an entire community, it's not to be classified as cholera, as a magefa maleches. Magefa maleches means that it just keeps going and going, and anyone who comes in the way, it's like an avalanche, a tornado, he will be infected by this disease. So that, according to the poskim, is a period of time described as a machla mishaleches, and there's no fasting. But corona does not fit up to that standard of a magefa maleches. Then he quotes Rav Bransdorfer, one of the great poskim here in the Beis Horah and Mea Shorim, and he says that we should be choshesh shenidbak hu bechlal makam aleches, that maybe he would come down with corona in a way that it will be a machla hamaleches, that it keeps spreading and spreading and spreading. We cannot control the machla. So again, we can discuss this at great length. It's almost a topic within our topic. To what extent would we classify corona as a machla hamaleches, similar to corona? And now, Rabbi Yitzchak Zilberstein, on the top left, second paragraph of page 2, divides up the issue into the following three categories. Number one, if he fasts on Tisha B'Av during corona, then if he tested positive for corona, he does not fast at all, because b'makom choli lo gozru be'rabbanan. Again, Rabbosai, please take note that Rav Yitzchak Zilberstein is matir someone who tested positive for corona, even if he has no symptoms. Because if you take a look, he didn't specify and qualify. It's only if he had symptoms. So that's a case of someone who tested positive, even though he has no symptoms. Now we get to the next case. And he's in quarantine because he had contact with someone who was positive, who tested positive. And you and I would have said, all right, there's an extra chumrah here, we have to put him into bidud, but we have no evidence that he came in such close contact with someone who is a chole with corona. And yet, the psak is that he has to eat pachos, pachos mikashir. Okay, now I want to get to the main issue for today. And this is a krona patient who was tested positive, and he feels great, no symptoms. So Rav Osher Zelig Weiss concludes that if he feels great, then he has the same status as a healthy person, and he's obligated to fast. And basically, according to Rav Weiss's approach, everything depends upon whether he suffers the tasminim of corona. If he doesn't, then he has the halacha of a bari, he's considered healthy, and he has to fast. However, Rav Moshe Feinstein and Rav Moshe Shaul Klein disagree vehemently with this approach of Rav Weiss. And what is their opinion? They say that once he tests positive, even in the absence of Tasminim, the Afilu Chole Me'umas Im Tasminim. For example, he doesn't have his ability to taste or to smell. Is he fasts. The only one who won't fast is a chole me'umas who has tasminim. So whereas Rav Weiss will allow a person who was a chole and he was misrape, according to the second opinion, if he's a chole me'umas, he's got to fast. Just one second. I'm sorry. Again, I just want to get the shittas. According to Rav Weiss, what we're saying is that if he's feeling great, then He's chayev in the mitzvahs. He has a din of a bari, and the experts will tell him that fasting from time to time is very healthy for the body. Isn't this amazing? Rav Weiss is saying that the man is infected with corona, but he feels good, and therefore his status is that of a healthy person. Whereas Rav Moshe Shaul Klein assumes that once he tests positive for corona, he's automatically a chole, whether he knows about it, whether it manifests on his body or it doesn't, he is a chole. And the next discussion, which will take us one step further, is someone who has the symptoms, but he wasn't tested yet. It says, Gam cholesh adayin lo umas kechole koroni, hasn't been substantiated by a test. Im yesh lo tasminim lo yotzu. So I would suggest that the main machlokas here is between Rav Osher Zelig Weiss on the one hand and Rav Moshe Shaul Klein on the other hand. And this, I think, is going to be the major issue in fasting on Tisha B'Av. According to Rav Weiss, it all depends how you're feeling. You're feeling good, then you should be fasting. You had corona, it's irrelevant. Everything depends upon how you're feeling. Whereas Rav Moshe Shaul Klein says that it all depends upon whether you have Tasminim. And if you're a Cholim Umas and you have Tasminim, then you don't fast. Is there anyone who would go a step further and say that if you're a Cholim Umas, even without Tasminim, you don't fast? Take a look at the bottom left in the name of Rav Sariel Rosenberg. And he says, Chole Krone Shema Umas Eino Tzam Afilu Kishe Eilo Tasminim. So according to Surreal, it all depends upon you had a positive test. Once you have a positive test, you don't fast. Whereas Rav Osher Zelig Weiss says, what do you mean he had a positive test? He's feeling great. He can fast for the next month. So why are you exempting him from fasting? He has no Tasminim. Now, Rav Moshe Shaul Klein is in the middle here between, you know, this battlefield between Rav Osher Zelig Weiss and Rav Moshe Shaul Klein. And therefore, he will take a middle-of-the-road approach. And he'll say the following, that if he's a Chole Me'uma but he has no Tasminim, he will fast, just like we saw in Rav Osher Zelig Weiss. And now, what happens if he has Tasminim? He tested positive and he has symptoms. Says Rav Moshe Shaul Klein, let's see, let's put it on the table, what are his symptoms? He says, "Afilu chole meumas, im atasminim shel ibud chush reach veruach vereach yatsum." If he doesn't smell and he can't taste his food, that's not called tasminim, and he'll have to fast. If, on the other hand, he's a Chole Me'umas, but he has Tasminim, he's got Chom, he lost his sense of taste, and those are Tasminim. So again, if he loses Chush Tam V'Reach, he doesn't smell and he doesn't taste, then he should fast. But if he's number one Me'umas, and number two, what Tasminim does he have? He has Chom, he has temperature, or he has weakness, then he doesn't fast. So you see that Rav Moshe Shaul Klein is very hesitant to alleviate a person who was a Chole Corona and he was tested positive from fasting. Regular Tasminim, low profile, that's called Ibud Chush Hatam V'Reach, he should fast. If he has more radical expressions of Tasminim, he's got fever, he's got weakness, then he doesn't fast. Now we get to the issue of someone who did not test positive, but he has the symptoms. says Rav Sariel Rosenberg, he does not fast. I think he's saying that there's so much corona in the air, and it's such a common disease, that testing our hin and testing our hair is less important to us than tasminim. But my question to you is there anyone who would say that a chole corona, even without tasminim, does not fast? We saw in Rav Weiss that his opinion is, if he's feeling good, he doesn't have to worry about fasting. And here we get to Rabbi Sariel Rosenberg. I think he is the most radical shita l'kula, if you will. I mean, it's a chumra in corona, but a kula in fasting. And he says that chola corona ma'umas eino tzam afilu kishe eino tasminin. So we have one shita that goes on board that if he contracts the disease, he will fast. We have Rav Nosson, Rav Asher Zalik Weiss, and he says that it doesn't matter if he tested positive or not. So Zaini tested positive, but he's feeling good. He feels like a healthy person. Why shouldn't he fast? And we'll finish up, I see it's getting a little late, with Rav Tzvi Weber. I don't know if he's related to Rav Yeshua, but he says, Ibeid chush hatam, if he lost the sense of taste, and going on to page 3, af im lo barur shuchole, we don't have any tests, then he is not going to fast. So it's really interesting. We have situations in which he registered according to the test as positive, and yet he still has to fast because he has no tasminim. We'll have cases where, according to some poskim, he has no tasminim. I'm sorry, he has tasminim. He was never tested, and he will fast. But, so what is the major criterion for setting up a chole sheyesh bo sakona, I'm sorry, she'ein bo sakona, as far as fasting on Tisha B'Av? Is it the fact that he tested positive? Or is it the fact that he has tasminim? And we have two nafkaminas. We have a nafkamina of someone who has tasminim but hasn't been tested. We have someone who's been tested and has no tasminim. He feels great. And personally, I think we should keep in mind this opinion of Rabbi Shmuel, Rabbi Sariel Rosenberg, who's claiming that once he's a chole corona me'umas, he doesn't fast on Tisha B'Av. Tasmina ahin, tasmina aher, it doesn't make any difference. Now, I want to let you go here on the bottom of 3 just to give you a quick overview of what we covered tonight. First, we had a distinction between Yom Kippur, which is Doraisa, and you could only override the Yom Kippur and eat and drink for Pikuach Nefesh to save human life. We had the case of Tainios, where with regard to other Tainios, other than Tisha B'Av, the minig is to to fast unless he has tzar gadol. Then we have someone who has contracted the disease. We have positive influence that he is a chola corona. Then tzav Tisha B'av. Now he says over here, B'tkufas HaKorona. I would say even in T'kufas HaKorona. Now, Adam She Tolami Od She Cholam Od V'nafal Mishkav L'chol Adeis Osel Olatzum. And I'm not sure when he says Osul Olatzum, I guess he's talking about a Cholam Ma'od. Cholam Umas. Right, he's been taken in by another family. Is we have one shita that says a Cholam Umas Lo Yitzave Afilu Lilotas Minim. And these seem to be the conclusions. Now what's strange is, if you saw the pages from Rav Willig, you know, when they asked him about fasting on Yom Kippur, on Tisha B'av, he writes in his very short, precise, typical language, same as all years. And I think after the analysis that we did in contemporary poskim, we are tempted to think that it's not the same necessarily as all years. Because there are poskim will say that once he tests positive, doesn't matter whether he had simonim or not, tasminim, he should not fast. We also had a shita that even if someone does not test positive, but he has certain of the manifestations of corona, then he should not fast. Okay, so let's take a break now. I think pretty much what we did today was an understanding of corona in terms of fasting on Tisha B'Av, and we've seen that there may be leniencies because of corona that would not apply during a regular season. So I'm going to bid you all a meaningful fast. And we still, yeah, please.
Are you planning on giving shiur after the Tanis tomorrow night?
Well, I have a daf yomi shiur, which I don't want to skip that daf, and I don't frankly see any possibility of giving that daf yomi shiur except after the fast. So I told the Chevre, my Daf Yomi Shia, that I would give the Shia Mitz Hashem at a late hour, maybe at 11, about 10:15 perhaps, 10:15. So that's still a little up in the air. If I give that Shia after the fast, then I would give the Shia right here in this room. And we would use the link for Daf Yomi. And as I said earlier, the second link of my daily linkage is called Erevin. First one is Daf Yomi, and that we would use tomorrow night. But tomorrow afternoon, if we want to get an insight into Shir HaShirim, I'm sorry, into Eicha, we could learn from 8:15 to 9:15. What time do you think would be the earliest time for Daf Yomi Shir?
Your health that's involved after a
tunnis. Oh. Yeah, well, Torah is going to protect us. If I can start the Daf Yomi at 10:15 tomorrow night, that could be good. The only time is when am I going to have a chance to prepare it? I don't know. Okay. So, let me close this shiur, and thank you again for coming. And I think David and I had a little discussion about whether this was problematic on Erev Yom Kippur, on Erev Tisha B'Av. I don't see it as a problem, personally. You can go out there, people will feel like there's almost a minion, you know what I mean? It's a psychological game. Yeah, take this with you.
Azaria? Rabbi Kito, if you have them already, can you use them for the last one?
Yeah?
No one's had to call you to come eat now.
Okay. The glasses. Okay, Sam, I think maybe we should have some discussion, open discussion. I'd like to hear, you know, you slug me up because of my attitude towards Herzog. I think my prejudice is based on the fact that I'm afraid of something called gaiva, something called just be machadish, just say something radical. I heard once a lecture in Mevaseret, we invited someone from Herzog, and the whole point of his lecture would prove that whereas Hagar was the heroine and Sarah was the evil one. I mean, it was just horrible. And I so much regretted that I exposed the yeshiva to such a lecture. I also once heard a lecture for someone else, one of the Gedolim in Herzog Mamish, all-time Gedolim. It's, a lot of it was based on archaeology and history. And just, you know, I'm into Chazal. I just think, you know, that why should we listen to people? If somebody wants to say a chiddush, is he oriented in Shas? Does he know all of Talmud Bavli? Does he know Yerushalmi? Does he know Sifra Sifri? You know, we have a tradition of Torah Shebichtav, Torah Shebaal Peh. Are people deeply steeped and knowledgeable, or it's just a question of gaiva? That's what bothers me. I think even Rav Lichtenstein, Zichron Levracha, was upset with some of what was going on at Herzog. You know, and it's nice to use literary analysis, but again, if it's something that's built on Chazal, that's fine. You know, you want to study Chachma, science, and math, and literature, fine. Chachma b'goyim tamid. But when you're studying Torah, don't tell me Chachma b'goyim tamid. The goyim don't have anything to do with Torah. They don't understand Torah. So I come with certain prejudices, and I ask myself, someone like you or some of the others in our group, why give up a Daf Gemara, you know, just for the sake of some, you know, nice, brilliant Kiddush of somebody who's not oriented in Torah? Hello? I should come up now? Okay, I'm coming. Hi, Sean. What? I'm sorry, I wanted to wait for you, but then I saw the ladies wanted to use the thing. So I walked in and I...